Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The old adage is business and religion don't mix. But my guest today says there's a growing movement in business both here and abroad that is countering that belief. He calls it the Faith at Work movement, and it's having an impact on company ethics and culture. David Miller is the director of the Faith and Work Initiative at Princeton University Center for the Study of Religion and the author of the book God at Work, The History and Promise of the Faith at Work Movement, which examines the movement's roots in the social gospel movement at the end of the 19th century and its rebirth in American business and around the world in the last 25 to 30 years. Miller is uniquely qualified to research this social trend as he spent over 15 years in senior executive positions in international business before returning to university to get his PhD in ethics. He'll be a guest lecturer tonight at 7 o'clock for the Phillips Theological Seminary's annual Remind and Renew Conference being held today and tomorrow on the seminary campus. He'll be speaking at 7, and the lecture is free and open to the public. David Miller is our guest today on Studio Tulsa. David Miller, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Rich.
In your book and in your work at Princeton, you've been examining a social movement you call Faith at Work. What is this all about, and how does it manifest itself in a work environment?
Well, it's a great question, which is what led me to begin studying it. I was seeing some different articles and newspapers occasionally about the subject, and in my own experience at the time, I was a senior executive working over in London as a banker, a partner in a small private bank, and I began observing, both in the States and in other countries, that more and more people want to bring their whole self to work, however you define that. The kind of the old days of there being different taboos at work, you don't talk about religion, sex, or politics. Well, those taboos began changing, and people talk about all those things at work now. And I was intrigued. Was this an isolated phenomena, just in a few different places? Was it just a Bible Belt phenomena, so to speak? Or was there something more widespread going on, which led me to study this?
Now, how does it manifest itself in a work environment? Is it everything from just having a casual chat about your spiritual beliefs, or does it take a more formal component? Does it involve outreach by a company? I'm thinking of like a company getting into something like Habitat for Humanity or something like that. These are all very good things, you know?
Yeah, well, that was one of the early puzzling questions. What does this look like? So if a concept exists when people say they want to bring their whole self to work, and what's that mean? And more, I would call progressive, smart employers in all different industry sectors are realizing that holistic thinking is the way to go, that if you treat your people as people and let them bring their whole self to work, that they're going to be more productive, more satisfied, more engaged employees. And we've seen that in the diversity and inclusion movement and other things. But what's starting now to emerge is people saying, well, I want to bring my faith to work, which begs a question to kind of your question, what's that look like? How does it manifest itself? And initially I thought it was maybe like a lot of people, that essentially people wanted to talk about their faith, that they wanted to share their faith with someone, to say, well, this is what I believe in and why, and hope that other people might join them in those beliefs. But I realized it was much more interesting and much wider than that. And I came up with a model I call the integration box, or the TIB for short, and it's that there are, broadly speaking, four different ways that people manifest or bring their faith to work. And some of those are visible and some of those are invisible. And some of them have nothing to do with talking about their faith, but it's a way of being, a way of approaching their work. And that's when it became really interesting to me to take it out of the stereotype of someone just wanting to talk about their faith.
Now, what are those four areas?
So to make it simple for me to remember them, I call them the four E's.
Right.
Each begin with the letter E. The first E is ethics. That for a lot of people, let's take the Christian tradition, but for that matter, other traditions as well, being an honorable person of that faith means that you're ethical, that your word is your bond, that you don't cheat people, that you're, if you go back to the Old Testament, there's language about fair weights and measures and scales. So bringing your faith to work for many people just means being ethical, being an honest, ethical person in all of your dealings, whether you're in sales, marketing, technology, agriculture, whatever your field. So that's one way. Another way that it manifests itself is what I call experience. How do you experience your work? Is it just a job to pay the rent and to get by? but you really come alive when you're outside of work? Or can your work actually be a calling? Can it be something with spiritual value, either the specific work you do or the end product of your company's work? Is it something that's good for society? Are you providing goods and services that help society? And many people really, the way they bring their faith to work is to think of their work as a calling, that they're meant to be there for a purpose, both what they do and how they do it. So we have experience, we have this sense of ethics. The third I call enrichment, and that's a bit more of looking inward, and that's the person who might get up a half hour before the rest of the family and do a Bible reading or a devotional book, or they might take a moment for contemplative prayer or say a prayer before they go into the meeting. It's sort of the tending of the inner soul, the balm in Gilead, if you will, where someone takes care of their own soul care through reflection and devotion and prayer and other perhaps other practices. They might be music and so forth. So that's the third. And the fourth category is the one that most people think of, and I call that expression, where how do you express your faith at work? And each of these categories, by the way, have two sub-orientations or subcategories. In expression, there's verbal and nonverbal. So the verbal might be the person who wants to talk about their faith and share it. Nonverbal might be that they don't really like talking about it, but maybe next to their workstation they have a Bible, or maybe they have a screensaver with a verse or something, or they have a statue of Buddha or whatever it might be. So these are the four different ways, and when you think of it that way, it's much more interesting, much more diverse. And my research shows that people actually have a preference, sort of a lead-with style, of however conscious or subconscious it might be.
What are the preferences? For one of the four? Or?
Yeah, exactly. It'd be one of the four with their sort of two subcategories. And we've developed, a colleague of mine, Professor Tim Ewest out at Wartburg College in Iowa, we've developed a psychometric scale, not unlike a Myers-Briggs scale or Strength Finders, these instruments where a psychometric scale where you can take the instrument and then at the end it says, voila, you're a this type. So you're an expression type of this category. That's your natural voice. Or you're an ethics type. That's your natural voice. And we're finding both at the individual level that people are fascinated to realize, A, that they didn't realize they might have had that there might be these four different categories. They might have thought just of one way of expressing or living out faith at work. And then the second thing is to think, well, how are we as an organization, and how is my colleague? And that there's interesting questions that might help companies as they set different HR policies on faith at work and how to think about it with this tool as a resource.
Now, that brings up an interesting question. As I understand it, this is sort of a bottom-up movement where workers are expressing the desire to be able to have, whether it is a Muslim coworker who wants to be able to do prayer time without feeling alienated, or Christians or whatever, companies that take into account various different religious holidays as far as their pluralistic way at work. How well are companies adapting to this, especially if this is a bottom-up movement, or is it a bottom-up movement?
Well, I'd say yes and no. It certainly is a bottom-up movement. My research shows that over and over again, that people don't want to have to hide who they are. They do want to bring their whole self to work. They don't want to have to park their soul in the parking lot when they go into the office. So to that extent, it's absolutely grassroots, and people are forming at work. There might be a prayer group or a Bible study group or whatever it might be in a conference room on off hours before work or during lunch or things like that that you see. And also outside of work, many groups, I call them faith at work groups, that may not meet on company premises, but like-minded folks who will come together and talk about how the challenges they face at work and how their faith might help them. Many times these faith at work groups are subconsciously, they organize around one of the four E's that tends to be, that we talked about earlier. But that said, in addition to regular workers of all levels wanting to bring it to work, their faith to work, I'm finding more and more CEOs are also creating a culture or giving people permission to do that. And often it comes out of their own life, that they too want to live an integrated life. And for many CEOs, their value system, their where they get their sense of right and wrong and their leadership style and the culture they want to create, for many of them it might well be grounded in their faith teachings. So there's another tier going on at the most elite levels of companies, small and large, throughout the country, of leaders thinking about it themselves, which leads some of them to create policies for their companies. One of the approaches that I talk about in the advisory work I do with different organizations is to think about this in the context of being faith-friendly as opposed to faith-based. It's a really important distinction to think about. Companies that are faith-based can run into different legal issues. They may end up, being discriminatory or a disincentive to someone who's not of whatever that chosen faith is, be it Jewish, Christian, whatever. Whereas a faith-friendly company honors and respects all faith traditions, and as long as everybody plays nicely in the sandbox, then you could bring your faith to work, whatever you are. So if you're a Christian, you don't have to be embarrassed about being a Christian, and you can speak as a Christian or do different things. And likewise, if you have certain dietary restrictions, if you're Jewish or Muslim, are the things that you don't have to be embarrassed about those things. It's just who you are, and your company creates a safe space for those kind of activities and conversations to go on. So this faith-friendly route seems to be gaining traction as the right business model to handle it, but sometimes can be a thorny subject.
Let me take a step back, because earlier in our conversation you said, you, as you began observing this, you said you want to know how widespread it was. Is this mainly American movement, or is this worldwide? I can't imagine European companies, given the state of, you know, what you hear is the religious, formal religious movements in Europe now, that this would be something that would be a part of European companies, or is it?
It certainly has an extra gravity and intensity and measurable empirical critical mass in the U.S. I could be in a meeting in Buffalo, New York, Biloxi. I could be in the South, the North, Chicago, Dallas, San Francisco, and I will find people and companies that are very much embracing this concept of bring your whole self to work, including your faith, and they're all trying to think about how to do it in an appropriate way. Get outside the U.S., it exists, but it's not as widespread. Some of it has to do with some of the European countries have become more secularized over the years, over the past few decades, so that's one variable at play, but there is great activity. In fact, 45 minutes ago, I had an interview with a journalist from Zurich, Switzerland, for the largest newspaper there, wanting to talk about the Faith at Work movement. It is going on globally. I've spent a lot of time recently in China, and it's extraordinary, the number there, the growing number of Christians in particular, who are very much viewing their work as a calling, or they're trying to bring a sense of ethics to their work, back to these four E's that we talked about, and very much motivated by their faith. So I do see this as a global movement with different levels of activity or traction based on the country.
How much is this Christian-based as opposed to, say, in South Asia being Muslim-based, or in the Far East, Buddhist-based, or Hindu-based in India, for example? Is this mainly a Christian-based movement?
On the surface, it might appear to an untrained eye to be that way, but when you scratch below the surface, it's definitely not. It largely reflects the demographics of the country. So if you take whichever survey you prefer to use for the U.S., roughly 85% of the people will describe themselves as Christians or out of the Christian tradition, so that's going to be what we'll see statistically. But there's Jews active in the movement, there are Muslims active in the movement, there's Hindus, Baha'is, more or less on a pro rata proportionality relative to the population. So that means if you go to some overseas countries that might be more homogenous, let's say a historically Muslim country, there it's just going to be Muslims. And in fact, Islam is an interesting study in its own way, because for the word Islam, of course, means a way of life. There's this sense of submission to a certain way of life. And if you talk to a devout Muslim, the idea of compartmentalizing your life, like many in the West have done, they just don't even understand the question. What do you mean compartmentalize my life? My Sharia law, my religious identity permeates all spheres of my life, not just my worship time. So in some countries, the question is even a puzzling one, because they're already doing it based on how they're wired, if you will, how their religious tradition has been lived out.
My guest today is David Miller. He's the director of the Faith and Work Initiative at Princeton University at their Center for the Study of Religion. He's also the author of God at Work. He will be a guest lecturer for the Phillips Theological Seminary's Remind and Renew Conference, which is taking place today and tomorrow at the seminary. And he'll be lecturing tonight. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. you know, it's one thing when it's, let's say you're a company in the Middle East and everyone is an inherent of Islam or a follower of Allah, or if you're in Hindu in India and it, you know, your company is in a predominantly Hindu area. How do companies address the dynamics of religious pluralism, and how can that affect the workplace? I mean, because, you know, even we've just come through the Christmas holidays in the last month, and Christians had that time off. Everybody had that time off. But if I'm Jewish, my company may not let me off for Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur or vice versa, other religions. I have to take vacation days for those. How do you address the, I mean, that's a nicky-nacky sort of question. But you know, I mean, but we're getting into the nitty-gritty of religious pluralism. How can that affect things?
Well, I think actually that's one of the exciting parts about the faith at work movement, and one that ultimately will help management. If we go back, say, 20 years ago, before this movement was as prevalent as it empirically is today, people didn't have a language or vocabulary to talk about the various things that you just raised. And if anything, if someone was a member of let's call it a minority religious tradition, i.e. not a Christian tradition in this country, if anything, their rights and their consideration for practices that are part of their religion would just never have been thought of. They would have been ignored or dismissed. And now we're beginning to have a healthy debate of, well, what does this mean? In some ways it's part of the American experiment of having a certain common narrative, and yet always that narrative pushes and grows and expands with different immigrant populations which come in and different voices which at times challenge that narrative. So I view it as an exciting discussion to have and not a problem. In many ways, we trip over ourselves. Sometimes we make it more complicated than we need to. The reality is not everyone is going to get exactly what they want in this conversation, but if it's approached with a sense of respect, with a sense of dignity and honoring the different traditions, and yet at the same time recognizing companies have a business to run. They have to make decisions in certain parameters, and not just like the federal government can't honor every single religious holiday, even if it might wish to. It has to anchor itself in a few basic decisions and then be creative with optional or floater holidays and things like that, and personal time to allow people to accommodate the needs they might have. But a lot of it's common sense. We make it too complicated sometimes.
You mentioned earlier, you said the ideal route is to be faith-friendly rather than faith-based. I would assume there are a lot of negative threats if you are faith-based, or even if you just don't understand what faith-friendly means, or your worldview is that maybe there's only one faith.
Well, and I think that has to be respected, that there are, the monotheistic traditions believe that, and obviously their adherents will believe that in different degrees. But I think the important distinction that I make in my research and in the conversations I have with different organizations is what's the purpose of the business? What's the purpose of a business in the marketplace? Well, it's to provide goods and services for society. It's not a house of worship. And my general guidance is that companies should not try to become churches, just like churches should not try to become companies. They each serve a different purpose in the civil society, and therefore we should honor and respect the different beliefs people have, allow them to bring those beliefs to work, but to focus on their behaviors. And maybe that's another one of the common sense ways to think about it. You could believe whatever you want, but how you behave at work has to be in accordance with your company's values and the laws of the land. So therefore, you can hold views that to some might be outrageous, to some might be curious, or to some might be just not understood. And that's fine to have different beliefs, just like we have different passions and root for different sports teams and are avid about various hobbies we might have in our life. But when you're at work, you are there for work, not for religious purposes. And that's an important distinction to make.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You're talking about this movement, and yet in this day and age, we have litigation going on right now over a company that doesn't want to put in all the parameters of the Affordable Care Act. You know, I mean, it seems like this opens up a lot of cans of worms that in some ways, I can see the benefits in ethics and the like. It's probably greatly needed in some business, especially around Wall Street.
Yeah, like any topic that's been suppressed and not talked about for a long time, when you finally begin naming the reality and saying, let's talk about it, you have to figure out some rules of the road and basic rules of engagement and develop policies and practices. So, of course, and we live in a hugely litigious society, so, of course, there's going to be different tests of, well, what does this mean? Where do we draw the lines? And I view all that as a healthy evolution of the faith at work movement. And it, to me, it's a sign of poor leadership to say, well, we shouldn't do this because we're afraid of all the problems that might be associated with it. I mean, if business leaders took that attitude of not engaging in doing something that's fundamentally sound, just because there might be problems, well, that's the kind of language people used to use during the civil rights movement. Well, you know, we really can't have a black person in this position because we've never had a customer-facing person who's black. And you know, we don't really know how to talk about it. It's a thorny subject. People get upset. People get angry. So let's just ignore the issue. Well, that's generally not a good strategy to ignore an issue. So I think we're going through a period of time where some companies are going to get it right and some companies are going to get it wrong. Some companies will do too much, others will do too little as they ultimately move towards a place of being faith-friendly, just like the early days of affirmative action programs. Some were, in hindsight, perhaps well-intended but poorly designed and had unintended consequences that people didn't think of. But over time, smart companies began to figure out how to handle and work their way through the race question. And those that did it early and engaged it early were the early winners, I believe. So in some ways, we'll, by way of analogy, I think we'll find the same thing with this discussion of faith and spirituality at work, that it will take a bit of time, but it's fundamentally the right direction to go based on the research that I've seen.
The other part of your message a lot of times is the fact that there is not a lot of spiritual help on how to negotiate workplace issues from your faith tradition. So what is it you would like pastors, rabbis, imams, and other spiritual leaders to address around work in those Sunday conversations? You talk about the Sunday-Monday divide, and
right.
You know, what are some of the things you'd like to see them address in the Sunday conversation?
Well, that's some of what I'll be talking about tonight at Phillips Theological Seminary. This is a very question. What's the role of a worship community in this? And as you say, whether it's a synagogue, a church, temple, whatever, what's the role of clergy people in this question? And my research shows that sadly, or I say sadly, it's a value-laden statement, I suppose, but that empirically most seminaries and therefore most clergy, because they're trained in seminaries, most clergy either don't know what to do with this subject of the Sunday-Monday gap or the worship-work gap, or if anything, they might even bear a certain hostility towards people in the marketplace, that business and money and profits are somehow intrinsically tainted and evil. So often you will hear from the pulpit messages of condemnation for the business. And even think of it a couple minutes ago, made a comment about, well, Wall Street could use more ethics. And there's sort of a pervasive sense that many people in business are either business itself and or the people in it are fundamentally greedy, selfish, not good people. That's a problematic message to be sending to congregations from a theological perspective. Certainly Judaism, Islam, and Christianity have a lot to say about the marketplace. And much of it is very positive of the role it plays in society and how the people who are engaged in those lines of work, how they should behave and conduct their affairs.
A lot of those are geared towards the individual businessman, but you know, when you get into a big faceless corporation, if you will, or you know, a multinational or a big Wall Street firm, there seems to be a fundamental conflict because, you know, the central tenet in nearly every religion is treat others as you would treat yourself. That's sort of a win-win message. And a lot of business is about competition, and that means win-lose.
Yeah, it very much is. I view this faith at work movement as operating, think of it as three concentric circles. The first is the individual person, how you and I conduct our affairs and what role our faith might have through these four E's, these four different ways it might manifest itself. Then the next one is our organization, the division or company we work for is the next concentric circle. How might this collection of people that work there shape and create and inform the culture of the company and what it chooses to do and not do and how it chooses to do what it does. And the third concentric circle is really the world at large, the wider ecosystem or an environment, and what role as an organization are you playing with strategic questions like the environment and things of that nature. The market system does have some intrinsic tension in it, like the Schumpeter, the economist, talked about creative destruction. And some of that is at odds with many faith teachings, and which is why many individuals will struggle with it. How do I be a deal maker, an investment banker, or how do I operate in a line of business which is tense and tough and does leave broken glass and broken people in its wake? Can you, as a person of faith, operate and function in those businesses, or do you have to self-select yourself out of those? Or do you go into those and try to transform them, change them from within? These are some of the big questions that men and women are facing who take their faith seriously and take their work seriously.
You know, I was interested. You one of the first questions of ethics that you addressed was a CEO of a company who has to, they have a company, say here in America, that in a small town that employs about a quarter of the people, but their wage base is so high that it's making the product unprofitable or uncompetitive, versus moving it overseas where you'll help another group of human beings. And then that really is, they're hard questions, very hard questions.
Absolutely, because if you take a Christian worldview for a minute, that worldview says that everyone everywhere is a child of God, that all humanity is created somehow in the image of God. So you could argue it's actually a noble thing to create jobs in an historically impoverished country, because you're lifting people out of abject poverty, and you could argue that's a noble thing to do. Yet at the same time, there might be damage in the wake of that decision, because a small town might have lost its heart and soul if its major employer shuts down, and you have suddenly a 35% unemployment rate. I mean, these are tough decisions.
Of course, the cynic in me would say, are they actually lifting those people out of poverty, or are they exploiting them?
Well, and it's a fair question. And again, you got to look at that real carefully. The UN has recent data that's come out, and no matter how you measure it, even with all the exploitation that goes on, which is real and needs to be named and talked about, that some 400 or 500 million people have been lifted out of abject poverty as a result of more of globalization that's going on. Does that mean it's always pretty and perfect? Absolutely not. There's a lot of brokenness in the system. But having work versus not having work, most people prefer to have work. And then again, think of the role of the faith at work movement and people who are representing companies, opening up businesses internationally. Are they trying to lift the standards up at the same time, or is it just pure exploitation? And a fair question.
Well, it's a really interesting topic. David Miller, I appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and all the best to you.
David Miller is the director of the Faith and Work Initiative at Princeton University Center for the Study of Religion and the author of the book God at Work, The History and Promise of the Faith at Work Movement. He'll be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock as a part of the Phillips Theological Seminary's annual Remind and Renew Conference taking place at the seminary today and tomorrow. The lecture is free and open to the public. The Phillips campus is located at 901 North Mingo Road. Information at ptstulsa.edu. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.